It's Walnut Wednesday here on today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. The show gets started with a Walnut Wednesday report from Taylor Chalstrom right after these messages. Let your bees carry a beneficial biofungicide directly to flowers and reduce brown rot, blossom blight, and jacket rot. Sign up for a field trial of bee vectoring and the biofungicide Vectorite with CR7 on your almond orchard. Deadline is January 15th for setup and use at the start of your February bloom. Email contact at beevt.com.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
California winters are getting increasingly warmer each year as a result of the effects of climate change, and this can pose an issue for chill requirements of some tree crops, including walnuts. UCCE Orchard Advisor Catherine Jarvis Sheen explained during the 2021 Walnut Conference that growers need to start getting comfortable with the chill portions model, become aware that, quote, low chill winters are becoming more regular, and that Chandler and other higher chill varieties will need help getting through warmer winters in the coming decades. She also explained the importance of winter dormancy and the effects it can have on trees come spring, such as early flowering and increased variability in nut size.
And the problem is then, so okay, if you have these nuts starting the race at different times in the spring, they also finish the race in terms of maturity in the fall at different times as well. So you have a wider maturity window. The other thing is that we know the way that carbohydrates work in these growing fruit, that the first piggy to get to the trough then is really good at elbowing out the other piggies that come to the trough later. So you end up having these larger fruit, which are the ones that started earlier, and smaller fruit, a lot of peewee nuts towards the end of the season. So we have, when we don't get enough chill, we have some buds that don't break. So fewer buds, fewer flowers, also a wider window of when that timing happens and a larger size variability.
She went on to explain physiologically how this all works in the tree.
The tree is staying dormant during the winter, and this is influenced by hormones. The hormones can say stop being dormant or stay dormant, depending on the hormone. This is influenced by the transport capacity within the tree, so essentially whether the cells are connected to each other and communicating with each other. This is influenced by oxidative stress within the tree, which is often a signal to stop that dormancy, to wake up in the form of reactive oxygen species. And then we have metabolism of energy, of carbohydrates, which you may have heard Dr. Zwinyecki or the Carbohydrate Observatory at UC Davis talking about in recent years, understanding how sugars and starches interact during the winter and leading into the spring. We know that hormones interact with metabolism, influence metabolism. We know that hormones influence this oxidative stress, which then feeds into stopping dormancy maintenance. And we know that metabolism influences oxidative stress. So we know that these different factors are all influenced by winter chill. So cold during the winter influences the hormone balance, the transport capacity, metabolism, especially this balance of starches and sugars, and oxidative stress.
Research out of the UC Davis Z-Lab in collaboration with Cooperative Extension and funded by the California Walnut Board found that winter heat delays bud break and decreases yield. Bud break in the spring is preceded by a big upswing in starch in the tree. If conditions are warm in the winter, trees adjust their starch-making system to keep starch low and sugars stable midwinter. But then it takes more heat than normal years to achieve high starch pre-bud break.
That balance of sugar and starch is dictated by enzyme dynamics. And the tree, when we have warm conditions in the middle of the winter, will essentially downregulate the changing of starch into sugar so that it can maintain that steady sugar level. The problem then comes when, if we have a warm winter, so that starch to sugar has been downregulated, when we then get into spring, we need a lot more heat to turn enough of that sugar back into starch to get that big bump up in starch, which we know we need for bud break in the spring. So essentially, if we get these warm winters, warmth during the day, heat during the day, that messes up this metabolism works so that we need a lot more heat in the spring to wake things up. And we see this in crops throughout California, in research throughout forest systems. This is a pretty much the rule of how things work. Warmer winters means you need more heat in the spring for things to wake up.
All of this research, Jarvisheen said, plays into the mindset of starting to be comfortable with counting chill portions and chill hours.
We count any hour that's between freezing and 45 degrees as one chill hour. And that's, you know, it's a model that served us really well, especially before we had computers and things that could do complicated calculating for us. And it's an intuitive model. But we found over decades and decades of work that there's a lot more subtlety to the way that trees are counting temperatures. So for one, you know, you often hear people talk about, yeah, we had a lot of chill hours, but they were warm chill hours. So I don't know how much that really counts for the tree. Well, this model, the chill portions model, actually puts a value to different temperatures. So if the temperatures are in the range of 43 to 47, they get a maximum chill value. And then if they are on either end of that, they can go less chill value, but still some chill value down to 54, and less chill value, but still some chill value down to freezing. So that also, you'll notice, expands the range of temperatures that we count as giving some chill value. So whereas before we were talking about 45 as the max temperature, now we're talking about 54. And this is great for California, where we have cool conditions that aren't always cold. So in these mild winters, mild climates, Mediterranean climates, we find this is a better model for that too. And the other big difference is that the chill portions model can subtract some accumulation if warm temperatures follow cold temperatures. So if you have some cold during the night, but then it gets really hot during the day, that hot can subtract from that cold. And the chill hours model doesn't have a way of doing that.
This matters, Jarvisheen said, because the chill hours model versus the chill portions model might tell you something different. She made an example of this by noting that in the 2013 to 2014 season, chill hours said that the winter temperatures were average, while the chill portions model noted that it was unusually warm.
And if you ask the trees that spring, the spring of 2014, did they think it was an average winter or did they think it was a low chill winter? They told us, oh, that seemed like a low chill winter. So throughout, we have pistachio picture here on the left. We have a young walnut tree here on the right that had none of these buds breaking on the south side of the tree for that whole season. And we saw this in apples, cherries, prunes, pears, everything up and down the state, aside from almonds. So really, that was a low chill winter that, if you're counting in terms of chill hours, really caught you by surprise.
Research into winter warming regionally in California has pointed to the fact that the Sacramento and San Joaquin Valleys will have warmer winters in the coming decades.
Looking at the change from the late 80s, early 90s, you know, when I was in pigtails, to the sort of 2060 time range. And they find that we should expect a roughly similar increase in temperatures from that range, the late 80s to 2060, of about 3 degrees Fahrenheit. So sorry, it's in Celsius here on the map, but 1.7 to 1.8 is just over 3 degrees in the Sacramento Valley and in the San Joaquin Valley. But another thing that I think is important to recognize here when we're talking about how things are gonna be getting warmer is that there's still gonna be a lot of variability in our winters. We're still going to be experiencing some cold winters. We're still going to be experiencing some winters that are what we now consider average, but we should also expect to experience more of what we now think of as low chill winters. And we should be expecting to experience even lower chill winters than before.
According to other research, the state is expecting about a 15 to 20% decrease in chill portions by mid-century or one crop life, and about 33% decrease in chill portions by the end of the century, about two crop lives from now.
So what is this going to mean for the walnuts we love to grow? If we think about Chandler as having roughly a 55 to 60 chill portions requirement, and that's to have like a nice robust leaf out, avoiding some of those like peewee nut problems. It's probably closer to 60, 65. And a bigger crop failure is more in the 50 to 55 range. We're going to be walking quite a line as we get into this mid-century zone. And I think this reflects what we've already seen. We've already sort of had a few shots across the bow in the last decade. So 2013, 2014 was pretty warm, 2014, 2015 pretty warm, and last winter was kind of wonky too. And we're not used to getting that many warm winters, that many problematic springs in terms of dormancy breaking. And certainly as we get down in the San Joaquin, southern San Joaquin, things are going to get a lot warmer. So again, mid-century might seem like an abstract concept, but if you're planting an orchard now, you're planning on that orchard being around in the middle of the century. The last half of the life of that orchard will fall under these conditions.
While this poses a big issue for the industry, there are things that growers can do to mitigate the effects of these low winter chill portions, including the use of dormancy-breaking chemicals.
So these dormancy-breaking chemicals can sometimes stimulate or even simulate, be analogs for hormones. And also they often trigger this oxidative stress reaction, which then stops dormancy maintenance. So with funding from the Walnut Board and many of you listening by extension, so thank you for that, we're looking into testing these treatments because they've been tested in walnuts in other countries and they've been tested in other systems in California, but never in walnuts in California extensively. So we're heating up some trees with these very cool structures and essentially simulating these warmer winters that we expect. So we're going to see if these dormancy breaking chemicals can compensate for these warmer winters. And then we're also going to be applying these chemicals to trees that are just experiencing the normal ambient winter to see what happens to the trees if it's not a low chill year. Are there other benefits from it? So we're going to be testing hydrogen cyanamide, which many of you might know under the name Dormex, the trade name Dormex. A nitrogen cocktail and a hormone analog to see how these impact the tree phenology in the spring, the following set, all yield metrics, quality metrics, all of this good stuff that will impact the bottom line. And doing this over a couple of winters and following springs. So that brings me back to our three takeaways that we need to start getting comfortable with this chill portions model and scooching away from relying only on the chill hours model. Otherwise, we're going to be surprised by the way a lot of these warm winters end up playing out. We're going to be experiencing more what we now consider low chill winters in the future. And Chandler and higher chill varieties are going to need some help getting through those warm winters. So that is what we as researchers and the board are investing in right now, is finding not just chemicals that can do something about it, but also trying to develop a real recipe for you guys so that you can get consistent results. And a lot of that comes back to this whole network of not just throwing it on the tree and seeing what happens, but looking inside of the buds, inside of the trees with the Carbohydrate Observatory to understand how the tree is responding to these things, so we can do a little more fine tuning of the dial of when we apply things, the rate at which we apply them, all that stuff.
Once again, my AgLife Daily News reporter, Taylor Chalstrom. I'll have regional agricultural news coming up next.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Before we head into regional news headlines here today, I want to remind you about some show dates that have been postponed. Pecan Day will now be on April 6th at Yuba City, California. The California Walnut Conference will be April 7th and 8th in Yuba City, California. And the North Valley Nut Conference will be on June 8th in Orland, California. In his recent overview of the California Blueprint on the 2022 budget, California Governor Gavin Newsom addressed the issue of drought.
Let's talk drought. It's front and center, though perhaps a little less so because of recent rains. They'll look at your forecast over the next week or so in the midst of what should be the most wet and rainy season in January. That said, we are mindful of our need to do better to prepare not only for the short term, medium, but long-term realities of a world that's being replumbed literally and figuratively as it relates to the extremes of weather. And so last year we put out $5.2 billion, again, California comeback, multi-year commitment to invest in drought preparedness. This year we're truing it up with an additional $750 million. So $6 billion, not bonds, not a voter initiative, general fund being supported in this space or to support this space. Here's the layout of some of the things that we'll be focused on. Again, we've got to do more work, all of us, my family included, all of us on water conservation, water efficiency, groundwater recharge and replenishment, continuing to focus on assisting small farmers that are under tremendous stress, some discretion in this budget as well, working with the legislature based on the complexity and nuances and the day-to-day realities of shifting changes and extremes. Some contingency support here will allow us to work with the legislature to fill in the blanks. So $750 additional million dollars on drought.
Governor Newsom also addressed climate change and climate smart agriculture in his blueprint speech.
Nature-based solutions. Last year, we put out a commitment for a three-year investment in almost $4 billion. Here's the second year commitment of that $3.7 billion three-year commitment. So of that 3.7, 2.1 we are projecting, or rather proposing, to be invested this year. $400 million for coastal and ocean protection. That 30 by 30, you may recall, we were the first state in the country. I'm very proud of this. Leading effort around the world, not just across this nation, to preserve 30% of our land and water permanently, sustainably. In this state, we want to fund that initiative. We made that clear when we announced the framework, and that's part of the $2.1 billion blueprint in this budget. Community resilience, catalytic projects, a lot of words that mean a lot to some people, a little less so to other people. End of the day, just investments, unprecedented investments in making sure that our wetlands are restored, that we are more capable of dealing with extreme heat, extreme rain, floods, and weather, including, by the way, first in the nation climate corps. I want to thank our team, Cal Volunteers and Josh Friday. Really proud of this. As you know, part of the Build Back Better program, Biden administration's trying to advance a nationwide climate corps. We'd love to see it, but until the federal government moves in that direction, we'll continue to lead with investments in that space. And by the way, those investments must include a framework of focus, particularly in urban parts of the state around extreme heat. Urban, again, not just a coastal construct, Bakersfield, Merced, Lost Hills, you can be in any community in the Central Valley. This opportunity to take some of these urban centers, for example, Fresno, and do more urban greening. So that's the framework of that $175 million investment. Smart agriculture, that's around issues of carbon sequestration, issues of healthy soils, equipment reimbursements. You can see here last year a $1.1 billion commitment we made. This is the second year investment, $417 million in this space. Also includes issues related to livestock and methane, again, in partnership with our ag community. Our circular economy is a fancy way of talking about, well, organics and composting and waste and recycling. We are committed to reform our recycling efforts here in this state. You'll see that reflected in that close to 300-page document in more detail. $270 million was committed last year. This is the second-year investment, $65 million in that space.
California Governor Gavin Newsom. More regional agricultural news right after this.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is investing $50 million in 118 partnerships, some of which include California projects, to expand access to conservation assistance for climate-smart agriculture and forestry. The Equity Conservation Cooperative Agreements, administered by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service, will fund two-year projects to expand the delivery of conservation assistance to farmers who are new to farming, low-income, socially disadvantaged, or military veterans. Projects will support USDA's broader effort to address climate change and equitable access to programs. The program encourages new partnerships and the development of state and community conservation leadership for historically underserved producers, with projects focusing on one or more of the key conservation priorities. Those include improving soil health and water quality, providing habitat for at-risk wildlife, improving natural resources and productivity on agricultural lands, and/or building and strengthening local and regional food systems and markets. On the project list is Black Thumb Farm from California, who will receive funds for cultivating capacity, including improving food security, community, and environmental outcomes through regenerative farming and land access. Also, the California Association of Resource Conservation Districts will receive funding to advance equity in NRCS and rural conservation districts across California by meeting needs at the district level. The Community Alliance with Family Farmers of California will also receive funding for cultivating stewardship with Latino growers in California. Also on the list, Solidarity Farm will receive money for cultivating a climate and crisis-resilient food shed for San Diego's BIBCO farmers. And the Rural Coalition of California will receive money to create effective partnerships to catalyze resilient operations for historically underserved farmers and ranchers. Produce Blue Book says Canada Company is recalling certain Dole and President's Choice brand salad products from the marketplace due to possible listeria contamination. Temporary COVID relief provisions authorizing to-go sales of alcoholic beverages in California expired on December 31st. However, new provisions authorizing alcohol to-go took effect January 1st. The now expired relief measures generally enabled any on-sale licensee to sell alcohol to-go. With the enactment of Senate Bill 389, the following businesses are permitted to make to-go sales of alcoholic beverages that are in manufactured prepackaged containers as of January 1st. All of these businesses must be licensed and they must all have a bona fide public eating place at their production facility. This includes craft distillers, beer manufacturers, wine manufacturers, and the holder of an on-sale license for a bona fide public eating place that has off-sale privileges. This too is a temporary provision and it will sunset on January 1st of 2027. A check-in with Nash Agricultural News coming your way next. The Musco Family Olive Company is leading the transformation of the table olive industry. We are committed to the California olive grower and invite you to grow with our family. Modern table olive orchards apply newly perfected state-of-the-art planting and harvesting to one of the world's oldest tree crops for proven superior results. There is opportunity in any crop transition, and Musco is proud to offer long-term contracts and free trees to our grower partners. Visit us at the Agro Melora booth at the upcoming Calusa Farm Show and the World Ag Expo. See you there. Despite the recent expiration of ag purchase commitments under the Phase 1 agreement, U.S. efforts to assure China meets remaining commitments under the trade deal continues.
U.S. exports to China, including ag exports, rose significantly through the Phase 1 trade agreement between the two nations. But as Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told American Farm Bureau Federation convention participants Monday,
our Chinese friends are about $16 billion light over what they committed to purchase.
Which is why he believes further consultations with U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators will be taking place.
Making up that $16 billion deficit over the course of the next several years.
As well as addressing sanitary and phytosanitary barriers China agreed to remove under Phase 1.
Whether it's ractopamine in pork, hormones in beef, ethanol tariffs, or the ability to purchase more DDGs.
The secretary added,
we're going to continue to press China on the need for complete enforcement and complete implementation of this trade agreement before we begin the process of discussing the possibility of extensions.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. dairy industry scored a big legal win against French and Swiss cheesemakers trying to patent the name Gruyere in the U.S., breaking years of EU efforts to monopolize cheese, wine, and other food markets. Virginia U.S. District Court Judge T.S. Ellis upheld a U.S. Patent and Trademark Board's 2020 ruling on an appeal by French and Swiss groups that Gruyere is a generic cheese that can come from anywhere. The U.S. dairy industry hailed what it labeled as a landmark victory and vital precedent in a long-running battle with Europe over so-called geographic indicators like Gruyere, Parmesan, and Chateau.
It's been a common practice of the EU to use GIs in a lot of their free trade agreements, and which in effect just locks us out with common, what we consider to be common food names.
That is Simon Vander Woody for the National Milk Producers Federation, as he told House Ag lawmakers earlier that there's no way around monopolized names.
If you take a Gouda and you try to sell it as a Garma cheese or something, nobody's going to know what it is. They all know it's Gouda. They all know that it's Brie or whatever. And so it has been a common practice of the EU to slap those into their free trade agreements with other countries.
Prompting Representative Jim Costa to propose.
I'm suggesting that maybe we look at getting our counterpart of the committee jurisdiction in the European Parliament to meet with ours to really see if we can get past the politics and work through some of this.
National Milk Producers Federation, the U.S. Dairy Export Council, and others argued the French and Swiss already have distinctive trademark logos in the U.S., yet continue their predatory naming practices.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That concludes today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.